Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. With Iran's dominant Islamic Republican Party now saying that the American hostages must stay in the hands of the militants, it now seems certain that whatever they may celebrate of Easter will be celebrated in the embassy that's been their prison now for 154 days. David Fitzpatrick has more from Tehran.
Easter presents began arriving at the American embassy today. Gifts from diplomats in Tehran to the hostages and chocolates sent by churches in the United States. The militants holding the 50 Americans say there will be an Easter Eve dinner inside the compound. And tomorrow, with the help of three American clergymen especially invited for the occasion, Easter services will be held. The clergymen expected in Tehran later today all are associated with the Committee for Crisis Resolution in Iran, a group that has been critical of American policy here. Meantime, Iranian President Banisad sent what the national radio termed an open letter to the Egyptian people, demanding the return of the deposed Shah to Iran and urging Egyptians to overthrow President Sadat. Western diplomats in Tehran say the action is one means of shoring up Banisad's status in the eyes of strident Muslim clergymen, who thus far have refused to accede to the president's request that the hostages be turned over to the custody of the government. Iran's Revolutionary Council will vote on that hostage transfer once more Easter night. David Fitzpatrick, CBS News, Tehran.
The Iranian developments, or the lack of them, may mean a curtailed holiday for President Carter. So reports Leslie Stahl from the White House.
President Carter is spending Easter weekend at Camp David while officials at the White House continue to monitor events in Tehran. The administration plans to maintain its policy of silence throughout the day unless the Revolutionary Council in Iran meets and announces a final decision on the transfer of the hostages out of the hands of the militants. Otherwise, the White House plan is to wait and see until tomorrow. If nothing happens by then, officials say it is possible, though not definite, that the president could return from Camp David to impose economic sanctions against Iran. Meanwhile, officials say they feel they're in a terrible box, with a realization that if Banisad fails, President Carter has no other plan, no other alternative but to impose sanctions and break diplomatic relations with Iran, steps which even the administration does not believe will produce a speedy release of the hostages. One White House official said the mood around here could be summed up in a word: sad. Leslie Stahl, CBS News, the White House.
Leftist guerrillas holding the Dominican embassy in Bogota, Colombia, have released two more non-diplomatic captives and say they'll release four more by tomorrow, Easter Sunday. That would leave only the 19 diplomats still in captivity. They, including the U.S. ambassador, have now been held for 39 days. And there is no indication of progress in negotiations for their release. The State Department here in Washington says that the Soviet Union appears to have slowed its spring offensive in Afghanistan in a bid to build support for attendance at the Moscow Olympics. The Russians, in the meantime, seem to be trying to give some legitimacy to their invasion by announcing conclusion of a new treaty with the Afghan government they installed. Gordon Joseloff has more from Moscow.
The TASS news agency gave no details of the treaty, nor did it say when it was signed. But from all indications, it was agreed upon during last month's visit here by Afghan Foreign Minister Shah Mohammad Dost. At the end of that visit, it was announced that there had been agreement on what was termed practical questions concerning the stay of Soviet soldiers in Afghanistan. The treaty does not appear to have any practical effect. It mainly seems to be an attempt to further demonstrate that the Soviet intervention has a legal basis and the approval of the national parliaments. Both sides have said Soviet soldiers entered Afghanistan at Afghanistan's request under the 1978 Soviet-Afghan Friendship and Cooperation Treaty. Western and Asian diplomats here say the new agreement may have been a protocol to the 1978 treaty. In any case, disclosure of the document is no doubt further evidence that Soviet troops will be in Afghanistan for a long while. Gordon Joseloff, CBS News, Moscow.
What may be the objectives of the Soviet intervention in Afghanistan? That was a question put to CBS News correspondent Dan Rather, who recently returned from that country.
Number one, to give the country a political infrastructure that will guarantee a loyalty to Moscow. Number two, to make certain that Afghanistan does not become Iran. They argue, the resistance leaders argue, that the Soviets are very concerned about this because the Soviet Union has a large Muslim population of its own, and that the more they can keep down strong Muslim feeling on their border, the less likelihood it is that they will have that kind of difficulty within the Soviet Union itself. Number three, that the Soviets want to, at the very least, control the important mountain passes into the subcontinent.
Correspondent Rather's full report on Inside Afghanistan can be seen tomorrow on 60 Minutes. Another state is holding a presidential primary today. This one is in Louisiana and is being found, reports Eric Engberg, rather too much of a ho-hum affair.
Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan have long counted Louisiana as part of their natural base in Dixie. Consequently, challengers to the two front runners chose not to contest them strongly here, a situation which has left most Louisianans, frankly, bored. Democratic and Republican leaders agree the vast majority of the electorate will go Easter shopping or otherwise engage themselves rather than vote in a primary most see as already decided. That will leave Mr. Carter with the bulk of the 51 Democratic delegates and Reagan with most of the 31 Republican delegates at stake in Louisiana. And it will leave the politicians wondering why they bothered to hold this primary, the first of its kind, at a cost of $1 million. It failed to attract much interest from the candidates or the political odds makers. So many political leaders in both parties are already talking about abandoning primaries in favor of some cheaper, easier to manage form of delegate selection in Louisiana. Eric Engberg, CBS News, New Orleans.
A long-sought suspect in Puerto Rican terrorist bombings has been captured in Evanston, Illinois. Phil Rogers of CBS station WBBM has details.
Among the 11 people arrested was Carlos Torres, the FBI's most wanted fugitive, and a familiar name here in Chicago. Torres has been linked by investigators to several of the FALN's most recent terrorist activities, including last month's seizure of the Carter Mondale campaign headquarters. He and his comrades were arrested in suburban Evanston, and a large number of handguns were seized. Police theorize the group could have been planning one of several jobs, including the hijacking of an armored car or even the kidnapping of a U.S. congressman. Later last night, Reverend Jose Torres, the father of the suspected terrorist, emerged from a meeting with his son and said he and his friends consider themselves prisoners of war.
And they do not recognize any jurisdiction of any legal jurisdiction of the United States court. And they demand to be taken before an international court.
The FALN is suspected in at least 100 bombings over the last 5 years. Phil Rogers for CBS News, Chicago.
For Britain's Prince Charles, the heat of Florida was unaccustomed and apparently a bit too much. The prince, in Florida to play a series of polo matches, was hospitalized last evening in West Palm Beach, suffering from heat exhaustion. He had played earlier in the day in 90-degree temperatures. A Buckingham Palace spokesman says today that Prince Charles is in good condition and resting well and may leave the hospital today, but will be under orders to rest for several more days. What's next for Mount St. Helens? Nobody knows. All that anybody knows right now is that what was expected hasn't happened yet. Barry Peterson has more from Portland.
The Forest Service, which is keeping a close eye on the Mount St. Helens volcano, is frustrated in its efforts. Bad weather has grounded spotter planes, and that only serves to make everyone a little more nervous. The volcano is displaying all the tendencies of a volcano on the verge of a major eruption. Washington State Governor Dixie Lee Ray has declared a state of emergency and ordered the National Guard to help man roadblocks. This because tourists are flocking to the area. But on the other hand, as the clouds swirl around the 9,600-foot peak, Mount St. Helens could suddenly go dormant and not make another peep until the next century. No one knows. There are more eruptions, there are earthquakes registering 4 points or more on the Richter scale, and mystery. What next is anybody's guess. Barry Peterson, CBS News, Portland, Oregon.
The prediction for New York City today is more certain. There will be a lot of walking and bicycle riding despite a windy, somewhat chilly day. Negotiators for the city and the striking transit workers are to meet again today, but still seem far apart on proposals to settle the now 5-day-old strike. With that grim prospect of no settlement in mind, New York Mayor Edward Koch said yesterday that he hopes the Easter weekend will give people time to recoup their strength before beginning another week of struggling to work any way possible.